one thing in pickleball is if you're trying to, you know, go for the bag and you're trying to hit somebody, the toughest spot for them to get out of the way of is if it comes right at their neck. So this is a fun fact. If you are trying to hit somebody with the ball, which is a part of the game, as long as it's not in the head, I guess, clearly now with this new PPA rule, the best place to do it is right here. Can you, obviously you can't go for the head, but I don't actually know if you can go for directly at this spot or if it stops here. My understanding of the rule is that if you go up above here, it is a fine. Obviously, if you do it at the rec level, you're not going to get fined. But I do think that rule itself sets some sort of precedent for what pickleball in general is. It's, you know, can you go for the head? Can you not? But it's also the PPA. I mean, they're experimenting. They'll make rules. They'll change rules. Okay, so thank you for coming back and watching another one of my episodes. We're just going to get right into it. So there is a new, very interesting rule on the PPA Tour, which is the main professional tour of pickleball. Obviously, you've got the APP, and that's kind of like the best players of pickleball play on the PPA Tour. And so when the PPA Tour makes rules, it's a big deal, and we follow them and we pay attention to them because they said tend to set the precedent for the rest of the game. So the PPA has now made a rule basically called the headshot rule or the targeting rule, which means that if you hit the ball at somebody else's head or above their neck, you can get fined $2,500. And the rule is based on intent. So the rule is not based on, accidentally hitting somebody in the head. The rule is just if you intentionally go straight for their head, you will get fined $2,500, which is no small fee. So I think the rule is basically meant to protect players, and it's meant as a statement on safety, and it's also meant as a decision. So the PPA had a decision of, because obviously the paddles are getting a lot more powerful, and there is a safety element now to hitting somebody in the face. With a very powerful paddle, if you hit them near the face, they could lose an eye, and there's definitely an argument to be made that there is a need for, some sort of protection. So the decision was option one, everybody wears glasses, I think, right? That was option one. Option two was we disincentivize players to go directly for the face or the head, because if they do, they get fined $2,500. And I think option two made a lot more sense for the PPA because one, they could collect a little bit of cash from the players, right? And then option two also made more sense for the PPA because the game just might not look as cool if we're all wearing glasses. And that's just a fact. Obviously, this is meant to be on TV. We're hoping that it will be on TV at some point. That's how we're all going to keep getting paid, the ridiculous amounts that we're already getting paid. And we're going to keep that up by some sort of TV deal. And you can't really do that if we're all wearing glasses. I mean, you could, right? But that's this. I'm just speaking as the PPA. The PPA is saying, we want to see the faces. We don't want to have everybody wearing glasses. So let's just disincentivize players for going for the head by saying that if you do, you get a $2,500 fine. And I said, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. And then the next game, I hit Dylan Frazier in the head. So that's actually a fact. I didn't do that on purpose. But if you go back and you watch me and Riley play against Dylan Frazier and Pablo Tellez in the quarterfinals. So Riley Newman and I made a quarterfinal run in Mesa, and it was a great event. We had a great time. And obviously getting that far is good. And in the second game, I hit Dylan hard right in the head, and it was right after I learned about the headshot rule, but I didn't get called because I guess they said it wasn't intentional. And I sort of, even though I don't want to say it was totally not intentional, I mean, it wasn't like I wasn't trying to just crush him in the head, but I was trying to hit him like right around here, because if one thing in pickleball that's interesting, and this is an interesting part of this rule, but one thing in pickleball is if you're trying to, go for the bag and you're trying to hit somebody, the toughest spot for them to get out of the way of is if it comes right at their neck. Because if they turn this way, they can remove their right shoulder from the situation. And if they turn this way, they can remove their left shoulder from the situation. But it's very hard to remove your neck from the situation, because if you go like this, now your right shoulder is where your neck was. And if you go like this, now your left shoulder is where your neck was. So this is a fun fact. If you are trying to hit somebody with the ball, which is a part of the game, as long as it's not in the head, I guess clearly now with this new PPA rule, the best place to do it is right here. So that's what I was trying to do against Dylan. I was trying to go for the neck, which I'm not actually sure with this rule. Is it, you know, can you, obviously you can't go for the head, but I don't actually know if you can go for directly at this spot or if it stops here. But that is something that happened. I did not get fined, thankfully. I mean, unless the PPA sees this podcast and they say, James, now you're going to get fined. We're going to see how that goes. But ultimately, leave your questions or you know, concerns about this rule in the comments. My understanding of the rule is that if you go up above here, it is a fine. Obviously, if you do it at the rec level, you're not going to get fined. But I do think that rule itself sets some sort of precedent for what rec pickleball, what pickleball in general is. It's, you know, can you go for the head? Can you not? But it's also the PPA. I mean, they're experimenting. They'll make rules. They'll change rules. So, yeah, let me know your thoughts on this targeting rule. And if you want to watch Dylan Frazier get hit in the head, you can. Just kidding, by the way. Dylan's a good friend of mine, and I was not going for the head. I was going for here. Hey guys, James Ignatowicz here. Just want to tell you about the new Selkirk 008. I've been loving the paddle. It's got the new pure foam technology. It's got a ton of grit, ton of pop. I feel like the control is great also, and it's coming in the different shapes. You can get it in the tour shape, you can get it in the epic shape or the Invicta shape. So you'll have all the options you need. Definitely give the 008 a try, because I think it's something that you will not want to miss. Next topic, we're going to talk about mixing up serves. So mixing up serves is interesting because at the pro level, it's almost never done. I never mix up my serve. I always hit the same exact serve, but my serve is one of my biggest strengths. And I think that I can hit it very hard if I just go straight on, a lot of pace. I'll miss one out of probably 12 of them, and that's okay. I'll never slice the serve. I have never, I don't think, ever hit a backhand serve in a pro match. I've never hit a forehand slice serve in a pro match. And ultimately, I think that for me, that's the best way to do it, because one, it gets me into a rhythm. So I'm always hitting the exact same serve. My serve doesn't feel like, oh, I'm going to take some off of it, or I'm going to hit this one harder. That thought doesn't even cross my mind. My serve is my serve, and I hit it to the best of my ability every single time. But I think at the rec level, there is an argument and there is a use case to sometimes be hitting a slice serve, sometimes be hitting a backhand serve, if that's what you're more comfortable with, sometimes hitting a lob serve. There are a lot of players that mix up the serves at the rec level. And when I say rec level, I mean below 4-5, you know, players that are not playing competitive pro tournaments or even competitive 5-0 tournaments. I think mixing up the serve can be an effective play. So my favorite way to mix up the serve is when I see rec players do it, I actually think on the left side of the court, if you are a righty, you can go from right to left fast and hit that side spin serve that curls outside of the court. And you've probably seen that, because I think that is the most common way that players will be mixing up their serve and not hitting a topspin serve. It is that side spin serve. And then if you want to, on the right side of the court, doing the exact same thing with a backhand serve. So the backhand serve means the ball is here, this, so left to right. So that's something that you would do on the right side of the court, probably not doing it on the left side of the court. So the reason that you would do a backhand serve on the right side of the court is because when that ball bounces, it will be running away from the center of the court. So that does something very important in the situation of your opponent stacking. So if your opponents are unwinding a stack, which means that they are returning the serve on one side of the court and then switching to then occupy the other side of the court, that is something where if you hit that serve that's now running away from the middle of the court, they're going to be running a farther distance to then occupy that other side of the court. It also just pulls them away from the court, even if they're not stacking. If you want to make somebody run a little bit more, that side spin serve can help. So if you want to practice mixing up your serve, I would highly recommend learning how to get a backhand serve on the right, side spin, and a forehand slice serve on the left with that same side spin. I think that is the correct or more effective way to mix up the serve and get slice on the serve in a way that will help you win points. So people ask me about the backspin serve. You can't just hit a backhand serve because that's not actually legal. So if your paddle face is above your hand when you're hitting the serve, that is not legal. Your paddle face needs to be below your hand, which is why a backhand slice or a forehand slice serve is legal, but a backspin serve is not legal. So if that makes sense, I hope it does. I don't have a paddle here to show you, but that is the basics of that. So mixing up the returns is another thing that I think I actually do not do as often, because I'm somebody who, I'm more of a power player. I have a lot of power and I like to hit my serve and my return hard. And I think that that's the best way for me to just maximize my game. But at the rec level and other levels, I think mixing up the return can be a very good play. So there's a few different ways to mix up the return. And we didn't talk about the lob serve. I think the lob serve can be effective, but I think that if you plan on playing at higher levels, I think that that's going to go away a little bit more, because the paddles keep getting better and keep getting better. And if you notice in the pro game, they almost never hit a lob serve, because with, you know, if you're playing against a pro player who has a good paddle, can hit a return very hard off of a lob serve, you're more than often going to get yourself in trouble as opposed to give yourself some sort of advantage, maybe even win the point off of the lob serve, because somebody who's returning it tries to hit it too hard and then miss it. That might happen sometimes, but I think more often than not, you'll get yourself in trouble and the game is only getting better and you want to train yourself to be playing at a higher level. So mixing up the returns, though, I think mixing in a lob return is something that will stay. So if you do want to hit a lob return, and I don't mean a sky high lob return, but I mean a return with some height on it that might be going over the height of the net at maybe, you know, 8 or 9 feet over the net. So that doesn't mean sky high. It just means lofty. I think there is a use case for it. So the first reason why you would want to hit that higher return is if you go cross court. Also, especially, I mean, if I'm hitting that high return, I'm going to be going cross court almost every time. The reason for that is that ball will be in the air for a super long time. So the main use case for it is if you're playing against somebody that has a very hard serve and a very hard third shot, and you're having a tough time getting to the kitchen, you're kind of getting caught in that transition zone, right? If that's the case, mixing in that higher return is going to be very valuable, because if you do execute a pretty high return, especially one that's hit cross court where you have more space because of the geometry of the court, if that's the case, then you will be firmly established at the net in a great spot at the net while your opponent is making contact with the ball. So they're going to be making contact with their third shot while you are already firmly established directly at the net. So that gives you a ton of time to deal with that ball. And then the question is, okay, well, if I put a little bit of height on my return, I might be, you know, the issue with that is they're able to hit maybe a little bit of a better third shot drive. They can hit a hard third shot drive. And that might be the case. I think that's player dependent. It's dependent on who you're playing against. But ultimately, I think the trade-off of, okay, now I'm firmly established at the net, I can watch them make contact with that ball, as opposed to being caught back here on my way running forward while they hit a shot that might be of slightly lower quality because I didn't hit a high return, I think that trade-off is totally worth it. I think if you can get yourself firmly established at the kitchen, it doesn't necessarily matter how good their drive is. If they're making contact with it from the baseline, you should be able to handle it. And if they're trying to crush a drive from back there, there is a good chance they're going to be missing those at some frequency. So you kind of bait them into missing it. And just remember that if your paddle is in a rush to go upward, right? Like if you feel like you're doing this, that ball is going out most of the time. So this is a good tip for you guys. If I feel like my paddle is here and I'm in a rush to go up, that means two things. That means it's going up at my head height, and it doesn't matter if I'm 6'3 or if I'm 5'5, it still means it's going relatively high, definitely very high over the net, if it's here. But also if I'm in a rush to do it, that means it's coming fast. So both things, it's coming fast and high, which means it's not going in. So for me, I actually practice this, and you can practice this, you know, just walking around your house. You don't actually need to be on a pickleball court to practice this, where you can feel your arm about to go up. And instead of doing this, you just stop yourself. And I, you know, this was the area of improvement that I had, I think, the biggest in 2025 or 2024, getting out of the way of outballs. Because every time I felt like my arm was going to go upward fast, I would just stop it. And it's tough at first, but you should actually, you know, teach yourself to do it and get used to doing it. Because if you get used to that motion of, oh, I'm about to do it, and then I don't do it, you can train your brain to not do it. And yeah, that's basically the summary of that. If you feel like your hand is in a rush to go up, don't do it and get used to not doing it, because that ball is going out almost every single time. Another thing with returns, mixing it up for me is high lob or hard and deep. I am sometimes, you know, for me personally, I'm not slicing it. I think at the lower levels, you can mix it up with some slice here and there. But I wouldn't get into too big of a habit off of hard serves, because if people are serving the ball hard to you and you try to slice it back, it takes some good hand skill to get away with hitting a good slice off that. So if you're somebody who feels comfortable hitting a good slice off of a hard serve, keep doing it. But I don't necessarily teach it to every player, because it's not easy to execute. I think it's easier to just hit a flat, hard return as opposed to trying to just slice it, because you do have to have pretty good hands to slice it off my serve. But for example, nobody will hit a slice return off of my serve, almost never, because if the, you know, it's just tough to control that slice, and also your slice is my topspin. So if you get sliced to me, that is topspin that now I'm using to hit a drive. And my best drives and my best topspin drops are all hit off of slice returns. And if you notice at the pro level, pros are not slicing the return almost ever anymore, because it really enhances the quality of my third shots. And when I'm playing against somebody that's slicing the return, they might do it the first couple points. And then after I hit some great third shot drives, they'll say, okay, we'll stop slicing the return. So that's just an anecdote, obviously, for my level, right? I think at the lower levels, there is a use case for slicing a return sometimes. It can travel through the air a little more slowly and, again, give you more time to get into the kitchen after your return. That's kind of why I advocate for a higher, loftier cross-court return as opposed to a slice. But again, at the lower levels, there is a use case for a slice return. I would just say I don't necessarily teach it off of hard serves, because it takes a good bit of talent to be able to slice a return well off of a hard serve. Can do it, keep doing it. That's all. And yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Thank you for watching this podcast.